welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, relationships, and life itself. Today we're looking at food waste in America. Between field and plate, almost half of all the food we produce in this country is wasted. In this hour, we will talk with the author of the book American Wasteland about our habits and regulations that have our food go to landfills rather than into our stomachs. Food waste in America, a question of value. Today on An Organic Conversation, I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palamar. You know, this topic has kind of been circulating in our office all year. Our associate producer, Kristen Ponger, has a friend who is kind of a professional dumpster diver. She actually has this really great business where she is reclaiming a lot of perfectly clean, healthy food that's been, you know, put in clean bags, but then thrown away because it was past the date that the grocery store could sell it for or the restaurant could use it for or whatever it was. So she gets this perfect food and then she gives it to people who need food. Mm-hmm. And so our associate producer has been, she even went on a dumpster diving excursion with her. Anyway, really great stories. But what it brings up for us is this relevant topic about food waste, which is simultaneously coinciding with this discussion about not being able to feed our country, how many people are going hungry. So when this book crossed our desks, we thought we've got to have this author on.
Yes, American Wasteland, and it's really from the field level on the farm, the entire Marin Organic School Lunch and Gleaning Program, an organization that I used to lead for 7+ years in Marin County, just north of San Francisco, was exactly built around that food waste. If food doesn't meet the strict market requirements for size or shape or color, it usually gets left in the field because it's economically not viable for a farmer to pick it up and bring it to market. Any especially small-scale producer needs to compete with the best produce they can at farmers markets and on a grocery store level. And Mark, you will chime in there on what the waste is on a grocery store level as well, as a national, international grocery store trainer. And it's amazing. We were able to feed, 10,000 kids. We would give access to healthy organic meals to over 10,000 children every week by just working with a handful of farms, picking up what would be left in the field as part of that school lunch and gleaning program, and using kits and the educational part of having them come to the farm and learn where their food comes from, helping us pick the food that they would then eat a day or two later. It made me realize at that point that a huge portion is wasted on the farm level. If you add retail, if you add regulations, if you add what else is being thrown away, again, it amounts to almost 50% of everything we produce.
It's really interesting what you're saying about the Marin Organic Gleaning Program and other gleaning programs around the country now. Yes. That we even have a National Gleaning Day, but that this food that's reclaimed from the field that would have otherwise been plowed under is going to institutions like schools. And as we will hear probably in our interview today, institutional food waste is one of the huge issues that we need to tackle. So looking at schools who are going to get food that has already been reclaimed, you're kind of addressing it at two places.
Yes.
When you bridge that.
And, of course, then there's the whole retail end where you walk into a store, you expect it to look right.
Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, because you buy with your eyes before you do any of your senses. And that creates, 5% of all produce brought into a produce department, isn't good enough to. And the USDA standard is they can have up to 5 to 10% of a box cannot be up to standard.
And you're true, Mark. You're right. There's no blame here because we expect a produce aisle in a produce department to look perfect. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want wilting, whatever it may be, anything challenged. But that's the way how we are trained too. And the question then is, what is happening to that food that doesn't make it onto the shelf?
And that's what I want to know.
And what can we do to prevent that? I mean, it was really interesting a few weeks ago when we had the episode on the Pay What You Can restaurant and how our guest, Denise Soretto, was saying that, Mark, you were just talking about this when we were preparing for the show, the statistics about how when she was doing this Pay What You Can restaurant and being really smart about how she used her resources. At the end of the week, when she looked at what she was actually throwing away, it was like, what, one bin?
She was, at the end of a weekend, she had 2 5-gallon buckets at it. And then the other high-end restaurants in town were doing like a whole dumpster worth of food.
Yeah. And we're talking, you know, banana peel, maybe some things you can't eat. But yes, Sita, you're coming from the restaurant side. And I just know how much is being wasted there. If there's a gigantic buffet at an event and after the party is over and the staff has eaten, everything that is not eaten usually gets thrown away. Nobody brings, you know, a car containers. Full of containers to put it all away and eat for the next 4 days. So that is happening nationally and even internationally on a daily basis. And it just amounts to an unbelievable amount of food that doesn't make it to people who live in food insecurity right now, or where the budget is not there to support any kind of ongoing, reliable food source. We host Helge Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And Sita Rani Palomar.
And you are listening to An Organic Conversation. Today we're speaking about the unbelievable amount of food waste in this country and the implications for us as a society on more levels than you might expect. Food waste in America, a question of value. That and more when we come back. Stay tuned.
SPUD stands for Sustainable Produce Urban Delivery. SPUD delivers the highest quality organic produce and the best locally sourced grocery items one can find directly to your doorstep. It's easy, it's convenient, and it supports your local economy. On every delivery day, SPUD takes at least 100 cars off the road that would have otherwise been driving to the grocery store. Reduce your carbon footprint, save time, and save money when grocery shopping with SPUD. Place your order today at spud.com. That's SPUD.com.
Are you a chef, have a catering business, or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, walk right in to Earl's Organic Produce. Anyone can buy directly from us at wholesale prices. You don't have to be a natural food store to enjoy the freshest and most delicious organic produce. We are located on the San Francisco Produce Market at 2101 Gerald Avenue. We look forward to seeing you.
Walk-in hours are Monday through Friday throughout the night from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. Minimum purchase is one box or flat, cash or checks only. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com.
Frey Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frey never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frey organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frey Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Welcome, friend, to the point of no return. What's it like? You can find the time to see.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today is food waste in America, a hard and close look at regulations and habits that cause 50% of our food go to waste without feeding anyone. But as always, we're starting the show off with our weekly tip from the world of health and beauty. Here's Chef Sita, a.k.a. Sita Rani Palomar, and her holistic bite.
Thanks, Helga. Well, this week I'm covering something that I've covered before on my Holistic Bite, but it's a topic that I find is really helpful and also really relevant. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we had a Facebook post on do-it-yourself almond milk that had such incredible traction with our audience, which shows that there's certainly a desire out there to make your own nut milk. And there have been some recent studies out lately about a specific ingredient that's in packaged almond milk that may have some harmful health side effects to it. So really, because making your own almond milk or any kind of nut milk at home is so simple, I wanted to revisit this and give you guys some easy steps on how to make your own nut milk. And there are lots of ways you can apply this formula. You can use just about any nut other than almond if you want to step outside of the traditional and get some different flavor profiles in there. You can use cashews, macadamia nuts, Brazil nuts, pecans. You can do a combination of any of those. I do a creamy baked polenta with a mixture of cashew nut and macadamia nut milk. And it gets so fluffy, almost like a souffle texture. And it's really, really rich without the dairy. So it's a great dairy-free alternative dinner. But there are basically, in my world, three different preparations for making nut milk. You can do a 30-second version that you make with nut butter. You can do a whole nut version. And then there's another whole nut version, which takes one additional step, but it so perfectly replicates this creaminess of whole milk that you may never buy another packaged nut milk again. So the first one is the 30-second nut milk, and that is really that simple. You take 2 tablespoons of nut butter. So whether you've got almond nut butter, cashew butter in your refrigerator, you put that in your blender with 1 cup of water, a pinch of sea salt, and then if you want to add a little bit of flavoring, you can do a little bit of a liquid sweetener like maple syrup or honey or stevia. And if you want, even a dash of cinnamon or a little bit of vanilla. And then you blend it until it's all combined and you can drink it right away. You can strain it if you want, but it's so simple because you're just taking already pureed nuts in the nut butter form and mixing it with milk. The other way, if you don't have nut butter, or if you want to kind of go the more traditional route, is to use a whole nut. And so the first thing you want to do is soak your nuts, because nuts and seeds have in them phytic acid, which is an enzyme inhibitor. And when you soak the nuts, you let that phytic acid kind of leach out into the soaking water. And then you can strain it and rinse it. And what you're left with is a nut that's more digestible and allows you to access those vital enzymes that otherwise were inhibited by the phytic acid. So you take about 1/4 cup of soaked nuts and 1 cup of water and the seasonings that I talked about in the 30-second nut milk, you blend and you drink, or strain if you want to go the extra step. But the flavor is phenomenal. Again, super simple. This process may take about 5 minutes after you do the soaking, which you can just remember to do the night in advance. Then the other one, which, like I said, teeny, teeny, tiny bit more time consuming, but you will not regret it because the result is unbelievable. And that is another whole nut version. But what you want to do is, this is great, particularly with almonds, is get a pot of water boiling and then throw your nuts in for about 3 minutes. You're going to blanch the nuts. And then what that does is, after you strain them, it's loosened the peel. It's loosened the skin of the nut. So you can put it in between a dishcloth and just slip the nut out of the skin. And then when you put that product into your blender with water and you puree it, the texture, it's so hard to explain. This is the method that I use whenever I create like a dairy-free Alfredo sauce, or I would use this as the base to share with students when I was teaching at Bowman College. It is unbelievable how silky this flavor is. So to do this method where you blanch it, you slip the skins off, you blend it, you can season it again with something like a sweetener or cinnamon or vanilla if you want to go with something sweet. If you're going to use it savory, like in a dairy-free Alfredo, you may want to skip some of those other things. But when you're done, strain out all of those solids, and it's just beautifully emulsified, incredible mouthfeel, and you won't be disappointed. So these are 3 really great ways to make nut milk at home and to enjoy the health benefits of a homemade, whole food, non-dairy alternative. And that's this week's Holistic Bite.
Wonderful. Wow, I love it. You forgot, of course, hazelnut.
Oh, hell yeah. I can always count on you to remind me of the hazelnut,
yes,
though.
I've never seen walnut, but hazelnuts and walnuts are the two nuts that grow the most in Germany. And hazelnuts are just, I think they're also called filberts. Is
they
that
are.
The same, Mark?
The same, yes, the same nut.
Yeah.
And hazelnut milk is
delicious.
So delicious,
yeah.
Especially with chocolate. Right. So if you want to make a mousse or a chocolate milk or,
yes,
yeah, definitely
save the chocolate mousse. And the study you are referring to is about carrageenan or carrageenan.
Well, I've heard both, carrageenan and carrageenan.
Yes, it's a moss, a sea algae extract, highly processed, and usually added as a thickener, I believe, to nut milks and soy milks.
Nut milks, soy milks, coconut milks, just about every packaged dairy alternative that you find on the shelf uses carrageenan as a thickener and also as an emulsifier to keep it from separating and having it be more watery on the top and then having those solids on the bottom.
Yes. So huge uproar of the potential health risk of carrageenan now after 20 years. Many, many studies indicate that there might be a connection to cancer, especially colon cancer, animal laboratory animals have shown to react to carrageenan directly. So the Cornucopia Institute is now petitioning the FDA to remove carrageenan from the list of allowed materials and ingredients. That's what you were referring to, yes?
Well, something that's interesting about that to me is that carrageenan is the same thing as Irish moss, to the best of my understanding. When I first started noticing on packaging, I'm a fanatic for doing my research, and I read that it was the same thing as Irish moss. And Irish moss is also a sea vegetable, but it's something that we used a lot when I was working in the raw food world, because you can soak your Irish moss and then puree it. You can blend it into a nut milk or into any kind of dessert, kind of like I was describing in this week's Holistic Bite, but it gives you that emulsified, creamy texture that you're looking for. But that's the raw version, right? That's the unprocessed, untreated, unheated, unpressurized, you know, it's the unprocessed version of it. And so now we're looking at,
yes,
just like with, Mark, you were saying earlier, just like with genetic modification.
Anything, really.
Anything
that
you...
The more we tinker it, actually, we literally change the molecular structure of foods, the more we process it, and then our bodies can't recognize it as food anymore. And if the body... If you ingest something that the body doesn't recognize, of course it does what it's supposed to do. It rejects it. And that's classic case of an autoimmune response. So, yes, whatever organic or non-organic foods, stay with as unadulterated and fresh and
whole.
Yeah, wholesome and whole in their natural state as possible. It brings us back to produce, Mark.
Always. And you know, also on that study you were talking about, the Cornucopia Institute petitioning the FDA, there's actually been several scientific bodies that have actually brought this up over the last several years.
Yes.
Saying that we need to look more seriously into this and we should do something about it. So it's not just them. There's actually a lot more science behind it.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting how it's evolved, too, because I remember when I first saw studies that were criticizing carrageenan, they were saying it's causing a lot of gastrointestinal discomfort. People are feeling bloated. People are having...
Well, indigestion. That's a reaction, right?
So, but that was kind of the trigger. This was the first thing that they noticed as a side effect. And now they're saying going even further, we're starting to see some development of colon cancer. So,
yep. So as long as the verdict is still out, maybe a good thing to reduce at least your intake or avoid it and
make your own. Exactly.
Yes. Thank you, Sita. That was Sita's Holistic Bite. And as always, the Holistic Bite is brought to you by the natural beauty company Ecobella. Ecobella offers a wonderful line of body care products and intelligent cosmetics. And of course, all of Ecobella's products are preservative-free, gluten-free, and cruelty-free, with only the best ingredients. Speaking of ingredients, that's why we love it. Check it out, ecobella.com, and let us know what you think. Again, that website is ECCOBELLA.com, and they're offering free shipping right now as well. Ecobella.com. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
We had our 200th episode a few weeks back. An Organic Conversation has been on the air for almost 4 years. And what fun has it been? And since that show, in the past few weeks, we've had some fantastic guests and their projects and initiatives on the air, from changing the world of youth obesity in disenfranchised communities all around the country by bringing together hip-hop, expressionistic art, and food education in Hip Hop Goes Green, to a pay-what-you-can restaurant that you just mentioned, Sita, a concept that has now become a foundation supporting the creation of pay-what-you-can restaurants all across the country and even beyond. You can check out all of our shows as podcasts on anorganicconversation.com or on iTunes. And of course, you can follow us as well on facebook.com/anorganicconversation for produce tips, recipes, and much, much more. Today, we are talking about food waste in America. Did you know that from the field to our plates, almost 50% of all of our foods gets lost? 50%. That's half of everything that we grow, raise, and produce in this country. Jonathan Bloom is an author from North Carolina who has taken a very close look at what is happening with our food, and we are talking with him about his book American Wasteland in this hour. Food Waste in America, A Question of Value, our topic today. Welcome, Jonathan. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank
Welcome,
you for
Jonathan.
Joining us.
Jonathan, we're so glad to have you. When I was listening to some of your other interviews and looking at your book and just looking over this whole thing, this just completely fascinates me because I've been in the food world for most of my life. So, you know, Helga was starting to talk a little bit about numbers. Can you give us a kind of a bigger picture here of what's the numbers around food waste? You know, what's really going on out there, and then how it could actually be, and how can this actually happen in our country?
Yeah, certainly. Well, when you take a step back, it is really staggering to look at the numbers. You mentioned that almost 50% of our food is lost. A more hard number is 40% of everything grown in the U.S. is not consumed. And that certainly adds up. It adds up to roughly 160 billion pounds and comes at a cost of $240 billion. And so those numbers might mean something to you, but they might not. But since images tend to speak louder than numbers, here's one for you. Every day, America is wasting enough food to fill the Rose Bowl, which is that tiny little 90,000-seat stadium in California.
So, wait, did you say every day?
Every day. And every day. It's actually pretty close to filling it twice. When I was doing the research for my book, it was just shy of filling it twice, and so I erred on the side of caution. But I think at this point we could say we're filling it twice every day.
Jonathan, where is the waste happening? Can you walk us through the growing from the farm, from the field, to the distribution, to the retail store, to the end consumer, the restaurant? What are the numbers? Where is it happening the most, even though all of it contributes, certainly?
Yeah, well, you know, I wish I could give you detailed numbers for each step of the food chain. But unfortunately, and here's a real problem with food waste, is that we don't have statistics that are that accurate, and we don't know exactly how much is being lost at each step of the food chain. But certainly we know that there is loss at every level, and even more than that, we know that a whole bunch of food never ends up leaving the farm level.
How were you able to measure the total impact? How were you able to define that number, roughly 40 to 45%?
The 40% figure, it's actually interesting. It comes from an obesity researcher at the National Institute of Health, and he looked at the number of calories produced versus the number of calories consumed in the U.S. And this is a guy named Kevin Hall. He's done some neat work there. But so that's kind of, I say it's interesting because it's not research that's done by the USDA. It's just someone at the National Institute of Health. And I'd love to see the USDA get a little bit more involved in looking at the numbers step by step at each step of the food chain. And there's growing interest there and at the EPA, but we need a little bit more attention paid to figuring out exactly where that waste is happening. And then I believe, especially if we can imagine all of the federal money that's not being used, that's where we'll get some attention and action.
Well, we were saying in our intro that it is happening on every level. Food that is not quite fit for the market, with some, you know, discolorations or out of shape or crooked or whatever it may be, or grown too fast. I was describing a small organization just north of San Francisco, Marin Organic, who started 8 years ago, the Marin Organic School Lunch and Gleaning Program. We were able to just pick the food after the harvest, basically gleaning, coming back to that old biblical term, "Thou shalt not glean the corners of thy food of thy field," and we were able to give access to healthy, certified organic local food to over 10,000 kids every week by just working with a handful of farms. If that is happening, and since that is happening on a national level, the farm level is one area. We talked about retail, making sure that the produce aisle looks great. There's a certain waste, 5 to 8% or so, Mark was saying, depending on how well it is run. There's the cafeterias. Can you pinpoint to you know, what other areas and why? Is it the expiration date? Is it our market restrictions? What have you found?
Well, first off, I will say that the gleaning programs out there are doing fabulous work, and it's such a beautiful idea and not a new one by any stretch of the imagination,
yes,
as you alluded to, but just a really wholesome and beautiful activity. But so I wanted to get back for a second to the food chain, because we do know that at the household level, there's about 25% loss. And I didn't want anyone out there listening to hear this conversation and think that it's just this problem that's happening throughout the major food producers and at the supermarkets or even on farm levels.
But
that
us,
is actually happening in our own homes.
Yes.
So we certainly can do a lot better there.
And Mark, in this regard, just to add to that, Mark, you always say, you know, be it the liter milk that gets spoiled or the carrots in the back of the crisper that we forgot that you can bend around your head after 10 days, 25% on a household level, just the economic impact that means we wasted 25% of our household budget.
Yes. Well, as Jonathan's getting into, is most people don't know how to choose their produce. They haven't been taught, or then when they get it home and they throw it all in the refrigerator, which might cause waste there, or your intention is to eat 7 potatoes, but you only eat 5 and then they get sprouted and you don't know what to do with them. So you toss them in the, you know, I mean, there's so many ways at the household level that just as a society, we just haven't been taught or we haven't learned how to even deal with our own produce purchases.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. Our topic today is food waste. And we are speaking with the expert on that topic, the author Jonathan Bloom, and his book, American Wasteland. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Jonathan, you had more to add.
Oh, gosh, I love how you guys do that name thing so quickly.
I love that,
no,
too.
There's so much going on with food waste. It gets into so many facets of life. But I think the household aspect is really most appealing to me. And what I've found is that people really want to cook healthy. They want to make their own meals, but they don't have too much time on their hands. So they buy fresh foods as if they're going to make these from-scratch meals. But then they get off work at 6 or 7, and there's no time.
Yeah.
And that took care of that.
Yeah, and then, it's always the next night or the night after that, but it keeps getting pushed off. And so that's why we often have those things at the back of the fridge that don't look quite right and get a bit mushy toward the end of their lifespan. There's plenty that we can do, but I think shopping smarter is the real key here.
Are you saying
being realistic when we're shopping?
Are you saying that as we are learning as a society to integrate more healthy and fresh foods, this is kind of the learning curve that we have to overcome for the next few years? Because you're right, if you have 3 potatoes and a bunch of kale, that is an entire dinner. And people don't realize how little it takes when you buy fresh food and produce, especially of how little volume you need to be full. It's amazing to me. So, you know, if you buy $60 worth of vegetables, that gets you through the week. If you cook 3, 4, 5 meals, and people don't cook every day, so are you seeing maybe that this is
we have these instincts to buy too much. We have that old instinct against starvation where we want to hoard and accumulate, and we want to see that refrigerator nice and full. But these days, if we are to fill our refrigerators, then we're going to waste a whole lot of food because they're so massive, and we get ourselves into trouble at the store where we essentially buy waste.
Yes, food waste in America, our topic here today on An Organic Conversation. We're speaking with Jonathan Bloom, the author of American Wasteland. Check out the website, that's wastedfood.com. Jonathan, stay with us. We'll be right back with more.
Roll away your stone, I'll roll away mine. Together we can see what we will find.
At Eden Foods, we've always strived to have a strong, positive impact on farming practices and food processing techniques. As the oldest natural and organic food company in North America, our business practices and products endeavor to contribute to a peaceful evolution on Earth. We encourage everyone to be knowledgeable, discerning, and proactively involve buyers, as we are. Look for organic grains, beans, beverages, and more by Eden Foods at your local co-ops, natural food stores, and online at edenfoods.com.
Want to feel your absolute best this spring, full of energy, clarity, and health? Join Bowman College founder Dr. Ed Bowman at our Vitality Fasting Retreat for the ultimate therapeutic mind and body cleanse. Detoxify, renew, and start fresh through a fun and rejuvenating four-day retreat at the beautiful Stillheart Institute in Woodside, California. The Bowman College Vitality Fasting Retreat is held May 16th through the 19th, and space is limited, so sign up today. For more information, visit bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N, college.org.
Are you committed to green, socially responsible, and sustainable business practices? Percepticon can help with eco-friendly internet solutions, website design services, e-commerce solutions, mobile apps, and high-performance internet hosting for your business. Percepticon is a full-service agency that specializes in web consulting, strategy, and technology development, so you can successfully communicate with your audience. Lighten your tech footprint in a green hosting environment. Call Percepticon today at 925-937-9000 or visit them at Percepticon.com.
Know that while my character is still, the darkness is a horse turned on
to. And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our story today is food waste in America. Almost 50% of everything we produce and grow and raise gets lost in the shovel before it ends up on our plates, be it the refrigerator or the farm. We're speaking with Jonathan Bloom today, the author of American Wasteland. His website for more information, wastedfood.com. Great, great website, actually, to check out. Good work there, Jonathan.
Jonathan, before the break, you were talking about how 25% is lost at the household level, which means that we have the best of intentions when we go to the store to buy healthy food to cook for ourselves and for our family and friends. And then we don't get around to it because maybe we weren't practical. And I found that to be really refreshing because for me, I do that all the time. And to give ourselves permission to say, you know, I don't want to waste. And if that means I buy less, then I buy less. So looking at what the impact is of this waste, can you share with us what you've learned about the social impact of the quantity of food that we're wasting?
Yeah, well, what I've found is that we don't tend to notice as much as we should the people around us who don't have enough to eat. But for me to have this vast amount of waste, to be throwing away 40% of all our country grows, and then to have about 50 million Americans who don't get enough to eat, there's something not right there. And I would call it a moral callousness to have that situation persist. But closer to home, we simply aren't valuing our food. And worse than that, we're teaching our kids that we don't need to value our food, or that they don't need to value their food. And it happens every day at school lunch, where we're giving them maybe 15 or 20 minutes to eat and really not allowing much choice for people who are buying lunch, and just teaching them that if they're not going to eat it, it's trash. And if you look in most any school's trash can at a school cafeteria, you'll see whole fruits and all kinds of vegetables, not surprisingly to the parents out there. A lot of vegetables aren't eaten, but yeah, what's the sense of giving kids an apple or a banana and then having them basically redistribute it to the trash can?
And just to do the math, Jonathan, while you were speaking, I just scribbled some things down here. So we have about 320 million people in this country, and you're saying that 40% about is wasted. That means if the 60% are able to feed 270 million people with 50 million in living in food insecurity and hunger, what is being wasted is twice as much food actually than what is needed to make sure that everyone has a meal in this country tonight?
Oh, it really would not be difficult to end hunger if we set our minds to it, if we had the social and political will to tackle it full on. And there was an old statistic out there, that it's a telling one, that if we were to redistribute just 2% of all the food currently being wasted, then we'd have enough to lift all Americans above that hunger line.
3%?
2%.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that speaks to kind of our social callousness, but also the sheer abundance of food produced in this country. And as many of the listeners will probably know, we are shipping so much abroad because we just have this glut of basic commodity crops. And that's not a great situation in most places where it devalues the food and we undercut local farmers on prices.
Certainly. Well, you know, Jonathan, certainly, when you're saying this, something occurred for me I just want to mention before we get to our next question. And, you know, you talked about being a callousness, and I'm just wondering about that word because I think it's either callousness or it's just an ignorance, because I don't think that the average person thinks, oh, I'm throwing this away and that someone's not going to eat. Because you said, like, I think that, you know, it's okay, it's mm-hmm. three asparagus spears, it's a half an apple, it's this type of thing.
It's nothing really,
but it is. I think you touched on it about valuing our food. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have the value. And when I was growing up, my parents lived in the Depression, and you know, you didn't throw away anything, right? Well, we need to use this. You need to make sure you eat that type of thing. And I think that there is something that with that abundance is that we forget, or we don't even see what's right in front of us.
Yeah, well, I think you had a nice point there with the ignorance at play and not really noticing when we're wasting food. The thing about food waste is it just tends to go away. It
right.
goes down the drain or out in the trash, and it doesn't pile up like the recycling. And so, yeah, most people aren't aware of how much food they're tossing, and there have been studies that ask people to estimate how much food they waste, and most everyone says they're really not wasting much food at all or none. And then when they go through their trash, they find a good amount there.
Yes.
So it is a lack of awareness to a large part.
Food waste in America, our topic today here on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we are speaking with Jonathan Bloom, the author of American Wasteland. His website is wastedfood.com. Jonathan, unfortunately, much of that food ends up in landfills or in trash, where it produces methane, which is 24 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than CO2. So it's not only that we're not addressing our food waste, our recycling streams, the stomachs of 50 million hungry Americans every day. We're also actually making it an environmental issue. What are the solutions that you are suggesting? What can be done? What have you found that would be easy or not easy, but that needs to happen in order to address this challenge as we're almost out of time for this interview, but we want to end on that note. What can we do? What are you suggesting?
Yeah, and just before I get into that really quickly, the other thing we are squandering are the abundant natural resources that go into our food. So when we throw away that much of our food, we're wasting the energy and water and land usage that have gone into producing those commodities. But we could certainly do a whole lot better. A few suggestions that I have is I'd love to see a ban on organic materials in landfills, and that would prevent those methane emissions that we discussed earlier. I'd love to see better data, having an all-encompassing study on how much food is lost at each step of the food chain, and that would help us set a goal on how much we can reduce waste. And they've done that in the European Union. They've decided to cut waste by 50% by 2020, or at least set a goal of doing so. And then finally, I'd love to see an awareness campaign to get people thinking about the impact of their food waste. And as you mentioned, people don't seem to associate wasted food with any kind of environmental problem, or maybe they're not even really noticing how much food they're wasting.
Yes.
But something to get people thinking along those lines would go a long way.
And I listened to another interview that you did, and you had, I think, three really interesting things for people to consider at home. And that's where we started the interview too, where you said 25% is lost at the household level. So, and part of that was not understanding the true expiration date of our food and also being empowered to freeze, your leftovers.
Yeah. And yeah, so, befriend your freezer.
Befriend your freezer. Slogan. Actually, I love that in your bio where you say that you have many, many, many containers for leftovers. So what can we do at the home level?
Oh, I'm glad we have time for this. Yeah. I mean, I alluded to it briefly before, but shopping smarter, maybe buying less, making more trips to the store, especially if you can do so in an eco-friendly way. maybe biking to the store, or if you live close to it, or hopefully even shopping at a farmer's market, but not bringing as much into your home. And then being smart about portion size and not dishing out too much that people don't eat all of that food or don't want to eat nearly all that food. And then with the inevitable leftovers, it's really important to save, but then actually eat those leftovers.
Yeah, right.
And we're all great at putting them in the fridge.
So true.
Fewer of us are good at using them.
Caught. Yes. Thank you, Jonathan. More tips and more information on your great, great website. It's called wastedfood.com. Wastedfood.com. That's Jonathan Bloom, the author of American Wasteland, a great book on the food waste issue in America. Thank you, Jonathan, for joining us today. Really a pleasure to speak with you. Wonderful.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks so much for having me. It was wonderful.
Thanks for shedding light on this. Again, that's Jonathan Bloom, the author of American Wasteland, the website wastedfood.com. Wow. Almost 50%. And yes, so much to do. And we're all guilty of it. I mean, Mark, you're a produce expert. I'm sure even you find once in a while that beet that you didn't know where you put it in the back of your fridge. So freezing things early enough. Don't you have like a bunch of great tips? Actually, that's what's coming up. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitavani Palomar.
And coming up is What's in Season, the update of the world of produce. And it might just be about food waste. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more.
I get up in the evening and I ain't got nothing to say. I come home in the morning.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Hi, my name is Peter Van Stolk, and I'm the CEO of Spud.com. Spud was founded on the belief that fresh, organic foods should be made easily accessible to everyone. Spud stands for Sustainable Produce Urban Delivery, and we do just that, delivering 100% organic produce and high-quality grocery items to homes and offices throughout the San Francisco Bay Area, Los Angeles, Seattle, and British Columbia. Visit us at spud.com.
Working from home is awesome, except when it's not. If you're working from your couch or your coffee shop, chances are you're not your most productive. For thousands of entrepreneurs, co-working is the answer. NextSpace is a co-working company with offices in LA and the greater San Francisco Bay Area. Find an innovative workspace, a built-in community, and great networking opportunities at NextSpace. Visit nextspace.us for more information. NextSpace, your best work happens here.
You can't start a fire without a spark. This guns go higher. Even if we're just dancing in the dark. Messages keep getting clearer. Radar's on and I'm moving round the place. I check my look in the mirror.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitavani Palomar.
And continuing the world of food waste, the topic of food waste, here is our very own produce expert, Mark Mulcahy, with What's in Season.
And What's in Season, we're talking with Earl Herrick, the voice of the San Francisco produce market from Earl's Organic Produce. And today we're talking to Earl a little bit about this whole waste and how to get things to market. And I'm going to touch a little bit on, you know, how to work
not
better with
waste.
This. Well, yeah, how to do a better job of that. Earl, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Hey, Earl.
Hi,
welcome.
Earl.
Hello, good morning.
You always come with so much energy. It's like a breath of fresh air. I love it.
It's springtime.
Well, you know, if you're on the market, you're going to get steamrolled if you don't, you know, get out in front fast.
Well, you know, so Earl, we've been talking about food waste today, and one of the things that you and I have been talking a lot about lately is your work with growers and how to help them get their product to the market. Why don't you give us a little idea of the conversations you've been having with a couple of your growers and why that's so important?
That's a great topic. You know, as a person that shops, like all of us, all you know is that it appears on your shelf, and there it is, and all of the intricacies that go into that. I've been able to go to a couple growers this past month in March, and all the way down to San Diego County, all the way up into the Central Valley of San Joaquin, and even though one's a citrus grower and one's a grower of stone fruit, the challenges are very common, and you know, it's not just planting and it's not just growing and nourishing everything. It's everything that happens after that is just as challenging. You gotta pick and pack it right. You gotta have the right cartons, and you gotta have to have the right pickers, because it's not just so simple of, you know, doing this or that. It takes a different type of person to pick a citrus versus a pear, knowing when it's ripe. So the main challenge, though, that I see that is the thread for everybody is, what do you really need on the market? Because I think it's wonderful that I grow and it looks beautiful for me, but the challenge really is the sizing right? Is it going to fit in the carton? Is it going to be presentable by the time it gets to where it's going? You know, we all love local produce, but the fact is, most of the citrus is grown and sent in Southern California, so it's got, you know, a 12 to 14 hour ride coming up here, and it's sitting on a truck bouncing around, and it settles, and it gets bounced around a bit, so it's got to be able to be packaged in a way that it's going to survive that trip.
And so do you actually work with growers and tell them, you know, here are the USDA standards, here's what we expect, here's the temperature it has to be maintained at, that type of thing?
Yeah, all those things are precisely what you're looking for. It's got to be, you know, so when it gets picked, it's got to get out of the heat. If you're in Southern California, you know, in the summer, it is 80, 90, 100 degrees. You have to pick it in the morning, get it cooled down, get it in the package, get it on a truck. So, yeah, we work with all those very, very, very specific, where it's, this is the size that you need, this is the carton you need, this is the weight the carton should weigh when it gets here, and this is the temperature. And then it's got to have a certain amount of quality, I guess, visual components. It can't have too much scarring, and it can't look too weird shape. It's all got to be pretty uniform. So, you know, when you think about that, what about all the ones that don't fit in that category?
Yeah,
right, right.
All that food.
And Earl, do growers usually pick to order? Meaning, if do they tell you, you know, I have about 40 trees ripe right now. How many lemons do you want? 80 boxes. Okay, that means I need to pick, you know, X amount of pieces of fruit. Or do they pick what's ripe and then call you and then say, I have 40 boxes that I need to move? Which way does it go?
What really goes both ways, Helga. It's interesting. Both the growers that I saw are completely different in that way. One, the citrus grower goes out and picks, calls me that day and says, I just picked this. The other grower is a smaller grower. He'll go out and pick and say, you know, this is what I think I have. What are you looking for? Mm-hmm. So it really, really depends upon the grower and what they're after. Many times, I say more times out of not, out of any, is that they're going on and picking what they feel is ripe.
Uh-huh.
Then they're going to tell you what they got.
That's a tight position to be in.
Well, it's showing me that there are so many places that, like, reducing food waste is really a state of mind, right? You have to think about it before you go into the fields. You have to think about it when you pick. You have to hold this with you all the time in order to be a part of the solution. And I know, Mark, that's where you're going next, which is how you be a part of the solution when you're in the produce market and you're picking up what you want to take home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Earl, we were hearing with our guest today, Jonathan Bloom, about 25% on a household level is being wasted. Even if people really pay attention and are aware of it, that's 25% of your budget. So for a farmer whose livelihood depends on just as much, really, than the household level on how little is wasted. That's a critical factor of the training that you do with them. So that's great. Thanks for that.
And one of the biggest recommendations I have is, what do you do with all this other stuff that we cannot take, all this other huge percentage? We can run up to 50%. And, and their options are, you have a CSA, or you go to a farmer's market, or you do bartering with your neighbors. Mm-hmm. And those things, they're not dependent on these critical issues of size and appearance. You know, they're much more forgiving in the situations that I just mentioned. So I think it's very critical to have those other outlets. Otherwise, the waste is immense.
Yeah, that's great, Earl. Thank you so much. Yeah. That's a really good view into that world that many of us don't even get a chance to peek into. So, Earl, as always,
very sensitive.
Such a pleasure to have you on the line. We look forward to having you next week. And your wealth of knowledge, and go out there and don't waste some food.
Keep training them. Yes, thank you.
We'll speak with you next week. Thank you so much, Earl.
Yeah, have a great spring.
Thank you too.
And so, just a few quick things for our listeners is, you know, one of the things, we all go to the store and we see what's there. And Helga, Sita, maybe you want to buy cabbage, but you don't need a whole head of cabbage, right? Unless there's a produce person there, you don't always ask that. Can I just get a quarter of a head of a cabbage? Or you buy a big bunch of asparagus. Now, you're more than likely to eat that because it's asparagus, but maybe not. You can buy a quarter of a bunch of asparagus. You can buy a quarter of a head of cabbage. You can buy bulk strawberries. You don't have to buy a big piece of ginger. Buy a small piece of ginger. Buy five stalks of celery. Most of the time it's sold by the pound anyway, or ask your produce person to cut one in half. The reality is we have more power on the shopping end, where we can still buy what we want and what we'll eat, but we don't necessarily have to buy it in the quantities in which it's being sold at the store. You have more power as a consumer than you think you do, than you think you know.
Mark, in that regard, is there anything you can't freeze? I love the idea. I mean, it's important when you freeze it that you actually take it out and then eat it, and not after a year find its freezer burned and you throw it away because there's no association to value left anymore anyway. But is there anything? I know, Sita, bananas, you say, you know, even before they go black for smoothies, can you freeze oranges? I'm sure you can freeze almost all vegetables.
So without, because that would be a whole show in itself, Helga, is you can freeze most things, but there is different ways to do each thing. So you asked about oranges, so I'm just going to touch on that real quick. A navel orange will actually become bitter if you freeze it. So you would do a Valencia orange, but you could wash Valencia oranges, not with soap because the skin will absorb the soap. You wash Valencia oranges, you cut them into quarters, you fill a Ziploc bag, a freezer bag, really, you know, up almost to the top. There's got to have some room to expand. And then you can put them in your freezer and then use them later. So that would be one way to do oranges.
Or squeeze it and maybe freeze the orange juice. Sita, do you have some quick tips on what can be frozen? Do you freeze it as a raw or after you cook it? Like, what's the better?
Well, my favorite freezing tip is actually to save the ends of your carrots and your onions and your garlic and your... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And freeze it, right? You don't have to make stock that very day, but you can save that and use it, you know, put it in your freezer and pull it out when the bag is full and then make your stock.
Is that why your iced tea tasted kind of weird the other day when I was over there?
Mark, I actually think we need a little blog or something, a little article around what, you know, what can be frozen, what cannot.
I'm going to write it.
I think we need an episode about it.
I think we need an episode on how to keep food.
Anyway, fantastic show. We don't have time for an organic moment, but it'll be back next week.
Good.
That
Save
was
it.
Our show on waste in the U.S., American Wasteland, the author, Jonathan Bloom, today on An Organic Conversation. What a fascinating topic. Lots to do and be, you know, refocusing on in our awareness. Wonderful.
Maybe we can do an organic two moment.
Thanks so much for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Underwriting production, Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And you can follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/anorganicconversation.
We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I had a dream, I stood beneath an orange sky.